Two of America's most wanted, Kevin Kincaid and Dave Zeitlin. Baxter's here as well, so he might be the third most wanted.
I'm not sure if you heard, but the Philadelphia Union won a game of soccer. I saw it with my own eyes. They came out in the field. They kicked the ball around. They scored some goals, and they won a game.
It's big stuff, and you have a statistic for how long it's been.
Yeah, since episode 2 of our 14 episodes we've done.
Yeah, we've done
every other week.
17. Though, so, yeah, we've done 17.
Okay.
And the last one that we did where we talked about a win was
episode two.
Yeah.
And it's the first time they won since you got married.
Yeah.
And my wife got pregnant right around the time of their last win. It was a big win. We were excited.
It was a big win. Let's just say that. It was.
But there's a chance that she could bring a baby from conception to birth in the time that the Union didn't win a game, but they...
Which is something that if you're a professional soccer team, you're trying to avoid that. But
9-month winless streak.
But you know what?
Not good generally.
Hey, credit to your town, your team, your Philadelphia Union, who kept a second consecutive clean sheet, a 3-0 win against the New York Red Bulls. I think now that I look back on it, my biggest takeaway from it was, once they got to that halfway through that second half, instead of crumbling and instead of folding, instead of, seeing the pressure kind of force them to collapse, they kind of went the other direction and they kind of got stronger, as the game went on.
Yeah,
and that was that mental kind of stability that we hadn't, that had kind of been, plaguing them for the last couple of months.
Yeah, it definitely, the game was kind of plodding along, kind of a boring first half, not too much happened. And then I guess midway through the second half, just seemed like a jolt of energy, whether that was Keegan coming in, Jones coming in, Roland Albert coming out maybe. But something seemed to change, and they got a much-needed win.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that was a big topic of discussion after the game, was how much did those subs change the game. And I wrote about that when I did the player grades and the analysis. So Roland Alberg picked up a quad, sometime in the second half, and Ray Gaddis had a collision with Kemar Lawrence on the sidelines, and Ray tried to stay on, tried to walk it off. And how do you feel too if you're Ray Gaddis and you wait a year to try to get a shot at the starting lineup again? He finally gets in there and then he hurts his leg. Of course he doesn't want to come out because that might be it.
Right.
But
Ray Gaddis playing on one leg. I mean, if you're Keegan Rosenberg, you're like, what more do I have to do to get in the game?
And yeah, did. I mean, it's a shame, but it is what it is.
Baxter is about this win.
Yeah, Baxter's up on Dave right now. Baxter, come on, get down from there, man.
Kissing my face. Yeah. I don't mind.
But when I did that, I just went back and looked at so they made the injury double switch. I think it was minute 63, and Auburn and Gaddis came out. Derek Jones came on, and Keegan Rosenberg came on. Obviously, Keegan playing right back, and Derek Jones played as a number 8, and Alejandro Bedoya went up, moved up and played number 10. And, I went and watched that sequence again from minute 63 to 74, where CJ got the first goal, which ended up being the game winner. And I didn't I think it was more so than the subs coming in. I think it was just about the game, like, sort of naturally becoming stretched there, because New York had a couple chances. Andre Blake had a save on Sasha Kljestan. Then Daniel Royer missed at the back post on a cross there where he got by Keegan. But on the other side, Robles had the really big save on CJ.
That's a great
save. On the header, great save.
Great save.
And then Chris Pontius had one that he fired over the bar, and he had another one where he got a shot off. So if anything, I think it was more about, there was a couple good saves in there. Both teams had looks. And then when the goal came, Harris Madunini just lumped a clearance forward, a terrible mistake, terrible misplay. CJ in the right place at the right time, and I counted it. He had time to dribble 5 times, take 5 touches on the ball, and then he hit that.
And a deflection.
Deflected shot in. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It seemed to me like at that point, I think we were looking at each other in the press box saying, maybe we're in line for another, like, boring draw here, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah. And that's what they needed to kind of come alive late, because I guess, like, versus Montreal, when they scored 3 goals and then they were kind of protecting that lead, like, this time they didn't really need to, like, protect anything. They just kind of, like, erupted late, and that's probably what they needed, right?
Yeah, for sure. But, defensively, the clean sheet, I think we all knew that when they were, after Montreal happened, that Jim, being the kind of coach that he is and being the kind of player that he was that they were going to always try to, get back to just trying to fix the defense up and play from back to front.
And I'll be honest, the fact that a back line of Gaddis, Fabi, Jack Elliott, and Gooch had a shutout is pretty surprising to me. I said before the game, it's one of the worst back lines in in Union history. Someone kind of got like mad at me on Twitter. He's a big Jack Elliott fan. But I mean, in terms of guys who have done much, I mean, these guys, I mean, Jack and Gooch are pretty untested in this league. As far as like Union center back pairings go, like throughout history, they've always had like these good, like MLS reliable center backs. And these two guys just really aren't. But I mean, Jack Elliott's been playing well. So
yeah, I mean, when you looked at that lineup, obviously the question marks were there. Gooch hadn't played a ton of games, and he's 34 years old. Yeah. Jack Elliott was a rookie who hadn't played a ton of games. Ray Gattis, who's a good 1v1 defender, but who hasn't played a ton, you know, over the last year, obviously. And Fabi, who I think he actually played really well in Los Angeles and played well in this game too, but hadn't been having a season that matched, you know, his output last year up until this point. I think that was legitimate when you looked at it. But Jack Elliott, just, you know, his thing is that he seems just like so calm on the ball.
Yeah.
And he shows this presence that's just sort of a veteran kind of presence. And that, you know, Jim pointed it out in the press conference after the game that Elliott took that yellow card, that tactical foul on Bradley Wright Phillips there. And that was also during that stretch of from 63 to 74 too, where Keegan played the ball back to him. Elliott took a bad touch and then he fouled BWP and took the you don't see rookie defenders do that.
My question is, how good is Jack Elliott? Because the Union have had players come out of nowhere in the past and they kind of play well for like a few games and then they kind of fizzle out. I mean, Ken Tribbett was like one example. Like last year he was pretty good at first, but I mean, do you see Jack Elliott as being like a starter in this league for a while? Should Josh Yarrow be worried about getting his job back? Like, where do you see Jack Elliott right now?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we have enough of a sample size to really determine that, but I've made the comparison from the beginning of Axel Schuberg, you know, in Colorado, you know, because Jack, we all know, is not the fastest guy, but he and Gooch, the reason they were really good the other night is just because they position themselves really well, and they know that they're not going to win a foot race, but they don't allow themselves to get into foot races in the first place. There was only one occasion, I think, that I counted where Bradley Wright Phillips was able to get the ball in space and run at Gooch, and I think they were able to knock it out for a corner or something like that, but... It's just positioning and presence and whatnot, and also the space between the lines was a lot better the other night. Alejandro Bedoya doing the defensive work that he was doing, Harris Madunyanin also dropping in a little bit more. But I mean, I was surprised for sure. I thought, that being said, I thought Red Bull, you know, was pretty wasteful on a lot of chances, and they had some looks, you know, in the second half. Obviously, you know, Andre had a couple of big saves, the one on the doorstep on Bradley Wright Phillips where they could have tied it up and made it 1-1. We're all sitting here looking at a 3-0 win and a CJ hat trick, but I mean, it really wasn't that far off from at one point being 1-0 them, or, you know, 1-1 after CJ's first goal. So I don't know.
So do you keep this back line moving forward? It sounds like Ray's still battling with the injury. He's probably questionable for game time. It sounds like Richie Marquez, he said he was pretty sick, but he was practicing this week. So I assume Richie gets back in the lineup, and I'd guess Keegan gets back in too, right?
Yeah, is he biting your hand? Baxter, knock it off. You have a bone upstairs. Go. I've never seen him do that before.
I'm allowing
I guess
it.
You could. Well, yeah, I mean, because we you know, after the Los Angeles game, I think people were saying, well, you know, he's going to keep Ray in because they played well out there. You know, and there's something to be said for continuity on the back line. But you know, Wednesday when we went down there, we're recording today, it's Thursday. Ray had like still had a pretty big bruise on his right shin. Roland wasn't practicing either, and Chris Pontius was out. Apparently, hey, no growling. Chris Pontius too was out.
This win has gotten Baxter all flustered.
Yeah, I don't know what he's. Yeah, I'm not sure why he's. He didn't get to run around too much yesterday. We went down to the dog park, and there was like nobody down there. So now he's biting your hand.
Yeah.
Chris Pontius too. I mean, he played with a broken hand a couple weeks ago, so Jim said he couldn't put his shoe on as of Wednesday.
Yeah, but he
made
he
it
can
sound
still
like
play.
He's a starter.
He can't put his shoe on, but he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there definitely are some injuries. If Alberg can't go, the Union really don't have that many options at that spot. They probably don't want to move Ollie back up there because they probably like what Harris and Ollie have been doing at the 6 and the 8. So the really only options are to either switch it and play two strikers, perhaps, or put Adam Najem, who's really unproven, but they do like him. I mean, Jim said in the press conference yesterday that he's a true number 10. They believe in him. He's been playing well for Bethlehem, so he could be a starter. And if Pontius can't go, it could be him in the center with like Fafa and maybe Herbers on the wings, which is pretty unproven attack, but I don't know.
Yeah, yesterday at training, they had Fabian on the wing with Fafa on the other side. You could also, you know, put Bedoya back up to the number 10 and bring in Warren Cravall, which is something that Jim, I think, talked about.
Something on the road they might do, but yeah. I know.
I mean, they did that as a second. I mean, not bringing Warren in, but they had Bedoya playing up there for the last 20-some minutes of the game the other day, but I think that was just kind of forced by the injury. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that Adam Najem I think he's been really, really good in training, and he's been pretty good in some of the steel games. But when you're 1-4-4 and you're just trying to get something going here and build off that, I just don't know if that's the time for it. But
Jim likes throwing rookies in a tough spot, so he made it sound like it's possible. So I guess we'll see.
That's true. If Derek Jones is good enough to be a starter this year, then why can't Najem? So you want to talk about CJ?
Yeah, he did get a hat trick, third hat trick in Union history. Were you there for the first two? Were you there for Latu's the first
I was, home game? Okay. Yeah, although I missed like the first two. of the three, because I wasn't actually covering the team at the time. I just went to that game as a fan.
And then Roland Alberg last year, his involved a PK too, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. His was
one PK as well? Okay.
Yes, yeah, there was a free kick. No, it wasn't PK.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
It was a counterattack, it was a free kick, and it was like the short corner, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, no, but that being said, CJ, when you look at it, it was, that was a poacher's hat trick. You know, he gets a deflected shot on the first one.
Yeah.
The second one, really nice ball by Fabian, knocked down by Pontius, and he just has an easy tap from 2 yards. And then on the third one, it's a penalty that Pontius earned.
To be fair, though, he probably just should have had 4 goals, because his best opportunity was the one that Robles saved. I mean, that was a great header, pinpoint right into the corner, and Robles had to make a pretty crazy save.
That was definitely his best. Yeah, it's ironic. Yeah, because if you were gonna take anything away from the hat trick by saying, you know, look at the types of goals that he scored or the types of goals that he typically does score, I mean, then you can point to that and say that.
But it's pretty crazy. I mean, that was a story we all wrote. The fact that he's tied for the Golden Boot lead with Kubo, and the fact that he has that, and he wasn't even starting at the beginning of the year. He was a backup to Jay Simpson. That's pretty crazy.
That's important for context too, and I think we all kind of mentioned that this week, and was something that I was trying to get at in the press conference.
Here
afterwards.
We go. Here we go.
Well, I mean, and the whole thing with Jim, I think everybody, you know, is familiar with the situation. I spoke about it on Twitter briefly. I was about halfway through a question, then Jim cut it off and basically accused me of trying to take a cheap shot at CJ, and said that I've been really negative and trying to divide the team and stuff like that or whatever. And we kind of argued, you know, just kind of yelled over each other for a little bit, but I said later that that's not really where I was going with the question.
Well, I'll say this as a journalist. The question was fair because I think we all wrote, me, you, and Matt maybe all wrote the same story for like Monday or Tuesday, and it was about him scoring 7 goals so far this season. Can he keep it up? Is the last 2 seasons with Philly, he's gone through stretches where he's been very hot, and it looked like a sure thing. He'd score like at least 10 goals, and then he kind of goes through a drought. So as far as articles go, I mean, that's the follow that we all wanted to write. So, I mean, I think the question was fair to kind of put it into more context. I guess maybe Jim expected all the questions to be like just kind of hyper focused on that like one game. But like we as journalists, we sometimes like to kind of like look ahead for like next day kind of articles. So.
Yeah. And I can understand. I don't think I phrased the question well. And for timing wise, you could say, I could have left that until Wednesday, or we could have went down there Monday and asked it. But at the same time, I guess I didn't even finish the question. And when I a lot of times what we do is before we get on to actually like what we're asking, you do like to preface it with some context. You know, CJ has always done well in the spring.
Right.
Hits a slump in the summer. Therefore, you know, with the part that I didn't get to finish, how do you get him over the hump finally? You know, here's a guy who's always had so much potential, but he's always been just short of that breakout season. I think everybody thinks that he can be a 10-goal scorer and be a guy who can put himself in the all-star discussion or have those discussions about whether he's a fringe national team player. So I don't think it's illegitimate to say, you know, how do you that is an issue that we've seen. We have facts that it back up, the idea that he always kind of hits that patch where he's not getting service and he's not creating his own shot. So how can that be you know, how can that be different this year? And CJ, to his credit too, we asked him kind of the same thing 10 minutes earlier when he was sitting up there, and he was fine with it.
I think Jim probably took it the wrong way. I told this to you after it happened. I think the whole streak was harder on Jim than he let on. He would always say, when he would ask about his like job, he'd be like, I'm fine. But I mean, the fact is he's this isn't like a temporary job from him. Like, he grew up in Philly. He lives in Philly. He has three kids going to a school here in Philly. If he gets fired, I mean, that's a big deal. So just hearing all those rumblings about his job for so long probably took a toll on him. And to be honest, I mean, we treated him fairly. Like, we all wrote kind of like negative columns, I guess, but like, none of us really called for his job. Like, we don't really think it was his fault. But the fact that there was all those rumblings for so long and they weren't winning, I think kind of took a toll on him, and he took it out on you, and he probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's pretty, you know, it's strange, because I don't think that we've sat here and said on this podcast before and in many different platforms before that we don't like doing that stuff. Like, when you're a writer, when you're a journalist, you don't like having to ask a coach to his face, you know, of what do you think about your job security, and do you think you're doing a good enough job, and, you know, is this guy playing well, is this guy good signing, I mean, all the negative stuff. It's not, that's not really the avenue that anybody likes going down. But when you haven't won a game since August of last year, that's what the theme is going to be. And when you win games, we write positive stuff like we did all of last year. And when you're losing games, you write negative stuff. And you can never please anybody either, because you have sections of the fan base that says, well, like Kincaid and Tannenwald and Zeitlin aren't hard enough. And then you have other sections of the fan base that says, oh, it's time for you guys to lay off, you know? Yeah. So it's always this balancing act of trying to walk it down the middle and be fair. But, you know, to your point, even when I wrote a couple of weeks ago, the headline was, should Jim Curtin be fired? Like, nowhere in that actual story and I think yours was the same as mine, where nowhere in there did we say, yes, Jim Curtin should be fired, or no, he shouldn't.
We blamed Ernie or fired. Jay more than Curtin. I mean, I still think Ernie didn't have a great offseason. So, I mean, I've kind of written that. But, like I said, Jim is a passionate, kind of fiery guy. He's kind of yelled at us all before, but he kind of laughs, like, the next day with us. I mean, I think he'll be fine with you. And it's nice in some ways that he reads our stuff. He kind of fights back. I mean, I don't see a problem with it.
Well, maybe and look at it from this way. If you're Bedoya or Sapong or whatever, and you watch that press conference, see it. Hey, he's sticking up for his players, and he's telling Kincaid to shove off or whatever. I mean, maybe that's part of it. Maybe that was, you know, part of the technique was just to kind of,
motivate the team. There's a picture of your face in a locker room that all the players are now throwing darts.
Well,
at
just for context,
every time
they
win, they're going to peel like a piece of your clothes, in Major League.
Yeah, I'd hope they'd be motivated by more than just what, you know, a writer says. But, I mean, I waited for Jim, actually, after the press conference outside in the hallway, and we had we shared a few more words outside. But then on Wednesday when we went down to training, Jim came up and he said, hey, Kat, what's going on? And we just shook hands or whatever. We didn't talk about what had happened, but I would assume that everything is all good.
I think you either need to give Baxter a bone or a rope or show him a red card, because this is persistent infringement.
Yeah, I don't know I've never seen him do this.
He's just biting my. He's been biting my hand like playful puppy bites for the last 10 minutes. Marks all over it now.
He's been really chewy for the last. Speaking of persistent infringement, and I won't go into too many details on this, but I was reffing a game the other night with a team that people are familiar with, actually, and the game got so out of control that I had to just abandon the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah.
So what happened?
Yeah, it was the first one I've ever.
You called
had
the game?
Well, I sent off two kids, one for like a terrible late foul, and he picked up a second yellow card. And then one of his teammates came over and said, what did you send him off for? And I said, well, he came in high and late and tried to hurt this kid after the play. It was like malicious. It was total bullshit. And the other kid basically responded with something vulgar, basically saying that they're going to do worse to the other team the next time. So I sent him off.
Wow.
And the coach walked onto the field and he started bitching. I told him to get lost. And then as soon as we resumed play, there was another like hard challenge. I was just like, that's it.
Wow.
Cause I felt like somebody was going to get get like killed or like break a leg or some fight was gonna break.
Kevin is just a calming influence. Who'd have known?
No, I know, right? Yeah, if I was a player, I would have got. Yeah, if I was actually in the game, it would have been much different. But yeah. it was strange. But
nice.
But no, I mean, like I said, we've been working with Jim for many years now, so I'd assume everything is.
Well, speaking of fiery coaches, Ben Olsen had some pretty good quotes after their loss last week to Montreal. I think he said they look like his team looked like posers. He had some other curses in there.
He said something like, "We played like bullshit."
Yeah.
Hey.
So DC hasn't been great. They've been better than Union. They haven't scored too much. They've only scored like 9 goals this entire season. Patrick Mullins has been hurt. Latu, who we all know well, has come on and scored a couple of times for them. So. Should be an interesting game. They're kind of as banged up as the Union are. They had Bill Hamid was questionable. Oh, there's the red card. Kevin is sending Baxter off, showing him the card, leaving the door, and the door is closed. He's gonna miss at least one podcast, I think.
I feel like, no, the only reason I did that too is because he started biting the damn cable again, like the microphone cord. He bit through.
It's okay if he bites my hand, but once he gets to Kevin's electronics,
there's so many wires here because I have like a drum set and three amplifiers on the wall here. One time he came in and he just chewed through like a ton of wire at once, and I'm like, well, hopefully it's just like one, but it was like 3 guitar cords that he chewed through in like one bite, so.
So anyway,
his ass is out of here.
He's out. He's not making the trip to DC. You are though. But
Are you?
Yeah, I'm not. I'll be working it on the desk from home. I have a kid coming in like 3 weeks, so I'm gonna stay close to Philly.
Yeah, that's future congratulations, yeah, thanks, man. It'll be number 2 for you.
Number 2. Yeah. But DC. So yeah, it should be an interesting game. It'll be your last time at RFK, maybe.
I think that's the only reason I'm going down. You know, because I didn't go down to the. Other one, I knew they had 2 games at RFK this year, so but yeah, I mean, the last one down there, and Jim had some interesting things to say about RFK. He said he always liked playing down there, and
he said stale beer and urine from Dave Matthews concerts.
That's what it reminded
him of. Exact quote,
yeah.
Always good when you get Jim to say stale beer and urine in a press conference.
I guess we're good, yeah, because that was my
in front of the military,
yeah, right.
Who has been some, so bored? That's a military guy sitting on a press conference, like 30 minutes in a hot room with us asking like Roland Albert injury questions. These guys are like, why?
Yeah. Welcome.
Why are
thank
we here?
This is how we're thank you for your service with a bunch of shitty questions. So DC, yeah, I mean, Sebastian scored a couple in the last 3 games, but he came out at halftime. Patrick Mullins came back in. So I guess we'd assume that Patrick Mullins is good to start.
Yeah, he came in at halftime. I think he's probably worked his way back enough to start. But they have other guys. They have Bill Hamid was questionable. He was a late scratch last week. I think Franklin's hurt. I think Birnbaum's questionable. Okay. So they have a bunch of guys questionable, just like the Union. So be interesting to see the lineups. It's kind of hard to like project both teams right now. So.
I'm laughing because I just picture Ben Olsen calling his team a bunch of posers.
Yeah.
Saying we looked like posers.
The whole team's questionable. Yeah. All right. You want to take some questions? Do you have anything else you want to
touch on? Did anybody ask us anything?
Yeah, we actually got a lot.
I was late to the
party.
It was
late, but all of a sudden, yeah. Doopy Brothers was the first, so we'll start with him. Okay. The Union are firmly committed to the 4-2-3-1. Have other teams in the league been a diehard on one formation like that? And he also asked, does Harris have the whitest teeth in the league?
Okay.
I feel bad. I haven't noticed Harris's teeth. I feel like I haven't talked to Harris that much. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I would like to have white teeth.
How are his teeth? Harris.
They're
nice?
Straight and white, yeah.
Okay. I'll write a column on that.
Is that a CSN Philly? You could pitch that to him.
Yeah, I will.
What was his first question?
And formations, are other teams as rigid as the Union pretty much are with their 4-2-3-1?
Well, rigid in a good you can be rigid in a bad way or rigid in a good way, I think, right? I mean, when you look at like Real Salt Lake for all those years, made the diamond their own kind of thing and carved out an identity playing that shape. Yeah. But there's been a lot of Columbus too played 4-2-3-1 for a long time. I think they still are playing it, where their hallmark has always been to split the center backs, drop Will Trapp in between the center backs, and turn it into, you know, a 3-5 when you're attacking. But no, I don't think there's been much other, like, I don't think there's been as much publicity about other teams like going do or die to a shape that may or may not be working, like the Union. You actually see a lot of flex. I mean, Toronto last night made like a second half adjustment and they came back and won 2-1. So
yeah. Okay, next question. Mike Bonfanti wants to know, do you consider DC a rival? I feel like we've talked about this a lot. We've both written stuff. I think it's, whether or not it's a rival, they've played a lot of fun games over the years. Like we've been to some, like back in Boyd's in DC, guys penalty kicks, guys getting thrown out. I mean, so and it's been pretty even over the years. I think both teams have beaten the other like 6 or 7 times. So, I mean, I think it's a fun series. It could become more if they play in the playoffs, but I think right now it's sort of like a rival.
Yeah, I would say it's more, and I know it's kind of died down a bit over the last couple of years, but in the early days when you had those Open Cup games and stuff, I considered DC to be more of a rival than New York.
Those games are fun. Yeah,
they were. And I was kind of rambling on about it last week, but New York, I don't even see Red Bull as being a rival team, because it's not, you can't just say they're New York and they're going to be a rival. You know, that feeling has to be reciprocated. And if Red Bull fans are going to sit there and say, we hate New York City FC, the new geographic rival, and we hate DC United, who has been our historic, Atlantic rival, then what is the Philadelphia Union? Is the Union like, I wish I had a better example. I'm not just saying this because it's a West Virginia thing, but I honestly couldn't think of anything better, you know? It's like we had always played Pitt and Virginia Tech, right? They were Big East and geographic Division I rivals, right? But Marshall was Division I too, but they didn't play. They were in state, but they didn't play in our conference, and we didn't play them that often. So is Marshall just then able to say, hey, you're a rival with us too? I mean, the feelings have to go both ways, and you need some kind of history there.
And the Philly's not going to get it from either side, because DC has been playing New York since 96, as you said, and New York and NYC have their own thing now. So, I mean, it's kind of tough for Philly. They're kind of in a weird spot being both new and just not really the same kind of like ferocity.
And the real question that I would ask is, do you need to have a rival?
They might not, but I mean, Philly's used to that. I mean, Philly kind of gets passed over by like New York and DC. They're kind of stuck in the middle there. And they're used to that, which is fine. That's why they have that chant in the Sons of Ben. Like, no one likes us. We don't care. So just let them do their own thing.
Yeah.
Next question. Who plays the 10 this week? Does Bedoya move back into the middle, or does Najim get the nod? We kind of touched on this. I really don't know. I think there's a chance that Adam Najim plays.
I think it's going to be Bedoya at the 10. Yeah. I just have a feeling.
That makes sense on the road, I guess. So, someone asked about your exchange with Jim, which we talked on.
What did they say?
Can you just talk about your exchange with Jim that got a bit of attention? Was there anything happening behind the scenes leading to that? I'd say not really.
No.
Yeah, we all get along well.
Yeah, it just came out of nowhere, to be honest.
Steve Jones, I think Jack Elliott has been great. Is it his job to lose when Yarrow is fit, or rotate those two and Richie somehow? I still feel like Josh Yarrow is gonna get the job once he's ready.
Yeah. I found this Shep Messing thing funny too, by the way.
Oh, you want
to
talk about that?
To mention that because I kind of fell in between podcasts, but
yeah, go ahead.
Did he rewatch the game and not see any of the New York broadcast?
No, I read your story and the transcript. I know you talked with Carl about it before the game.
Yeah. Oh, you thought it was funny.
Do you want to tell people like what it was?
So, the 90th minute of the team produced radio show, they had Shep Messing on last week, and he's the New York color commentator. You know, the old school goalkeeper used to play in the NASL back in the day. And just sort of like unprovoked, kind of came out of nowhere. Chirkin was asking him something unrelated. And Messing just says, by the way, I just want to mention, Jay Sugarman's been doing a good job. He's spending more money than Red Bull.
Chris Albright has been a failure.
Chris Albright's been a failure. And Ernie Stewart's signing a bunch of overpriced Dutch players, which isn't true, because he only signed two Dutch players. One of them makes $300,000. The other one makes like $78,000. But it was just, I just thought it was like goofy that this guy would have like an unprovoked attack on the Union's like team produced radio show. And then he continued that during the broadcast too.
And no one's really attacked Chris Albright before. Was he kind of,
but
he got the job right after playing. I guess he did a couple of good things. No one really knows exactly like what signings are his, what are Ernie's.
Well, which is why when I saw that, I knew that it came from Sakevich, because Nick and Shep Messing have been very close over the years. And there's no doubt in my mind that Nick probably told Shep Messing over the years, hey, Chris Albright's doing a shitty job and blah, blah. I know for a fact that he told him that. that Chris Albright's been doing a shitty job. And so Shep Messing, that manifests itself like 2 years later in like, hey, you fired my friend, so I'm going to go on your radio show and tell you how shitty your technical director is. Like, what is this?
But
like,
I mean,
preschool?
The guy who fired Nick was Jay Sugarman.
Right.
So why would Shep Messing defend Jay? And if he was just speaking for Nick,
maybe that was just a way for him to kind of preface it to not be like, I don't know. I thought the whole thing was
Nick Sakevich still hurting the union.
The specter of,
how's he doing? Is the NLL commish?
Do you think we should
have him on a podcast maybe as a guest when he's
doing? I don't know if Nick would want to come on anymore. I haven't talked to him in a while, but weren't we watching live national lacrosse on like Facebook or Twitter the other night?
Yeah, they seem to be
moving along.
Greg Troxell, obviously a striker and a 10 are needs for the union. What are your thoughts on a realistic target for each, both domestic and international? Aaron Johansson, can the union afford him this summer?
Here's the thing, they
need a 10 a lot more than a striker.
I would still throw like $2 million at Adam Maher.
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing for like Osmanlıspor or something down like out in Turkey. Adam Maher, I think most people know who he was. He was the AZ number 10 who played behind Josie when Josie was really, really good there. And then they transferred and they sold him to PSV. And he kind of fell out of favor or something at PSV and he ended up on loan in Turkey. He might be there permanently now. I'm not sure, but he'd fit this team perfectly.
Okay. Some people asking what the team should do with Jones out, plus the other injuries this week. I mean, Craval's ready. He was great last year. He just hasn't played yet. But
he was probably the best player on the field in the playoff game with a broken rib. If you're talking about needing the guy next to Madunian in to protect him, I mean, that's Warren Craval to a T. That's what he does, you know?
And plus late in games, you could bring him in.
Because when Warren played, remember they would play that Warren and BC pair last year where BC would sit a little bit deeper and Warren would just kind of be the destroyer as a number eight. That's exactly the role that he would be playing if they put him in this weekend.
Matt Thornton wants us to project the lineup for the weekend with all those guys out. Well, like, we don't know for sure if Pontius, Alberg, and Gattis are out. Jim said Pontius should play. Alberg and Gattis, I guess, probably won't. It's like we talked about, I think so.
So Blake, Fabinho,
Marquez play? I think Marquez will be back.
And Elliot?
And Elliot, probably, yeah.
And then Rosenberry, you think?
Yeah, I think Rosenberry.
Madunianin, Craval, Bedoya.
Yeah, I guess so.
Pontius, and then who's on the right? Ilsino is back this week, too.
I mean, Fafa played good enough to probably keep the job last week, I'd say. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a strange,
And then
CJ. There's a lot of options.
Couple other similar questions. Will there be U.S. Open Cup games at Tallinn in the early rounds? Probably. There usually is.
Yeah, and there was a cup. There was the first round last night. Reading United won.
Yeah.
Junior Lone Star lost.
Good feature by Matt DeGeorge on them. So that was cool. Junior Lone Star played in their first Open Cup. They lost to Ocean City 3-1, right?
Yeah.
Ocean City
is a good team.
So for those who don't know, Junior Lone Star is a team of basically... Is it a Liberian immigrants or?
Immigrants. Yeah. There's some refugees in there too. Yeah. Because Derek came over from Ghana. They kind of collect the, they're kind of a landing pad for West African immigrants who come over to, who end up in Philadelphia. Yeah.
So I think Reading has the Cosmos next, which will be, it should be cool.
Yeah.
If they can beat them.
Did Harrisburg play yet? Or
not yet.
I think they
get a bye.
The Magic. Of the Open Cup.
Yeah. It'll be fun. So I guess it starts for the Union in June. I might have to miss those games if I have a young infant.
Okay. That's fine. I'm going to miss the next two home games because I'm going on vacation. So go figure.
Where are you going?
We're bugging out to Miami for a little bit.
Nice.
It's been a while. Yeah, since we've been on any kind of vacation. So
you can do a piece on David Beckham while you're down there?
Hopefully not.
Looks like last question from Scotty. What can I get out of the Moadu contract? There it is. You had the good Mo question, so they can spend that money elsewhere. We talked to Jim. They can't really get any relief. I think his contract ends at the end of this year, right? So, I mean...
Yeah, we were assuming that it's up at the end of this year. I mean, at this
point,
it's
pretty much has to be, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing they could do this year. They, I mean, they're not going to like buy him out. If he could play at some point this year, that's great. If he can't, then they'll just wish him well.
No, oh, right. It's not like if this on. Was if this was Toronto and they were maxed out on DP slots and they had the money to buy out his contract and free up that spot, sure. But I mean, the Philadelphia Union aren't going to do that. So I think everybody's just kind of stuck with Mo being where he is right now. And there's not really much more to say about it.
Yeah, it sounded last week when we talked to Curtin that there's a chance he might not play again, which would be pretty sad. But.
Yeah.
All right, so predictions?
Anything else in there? Well, I'll say that they I can't see him keeping a third clean sheet in a row on the road at D.C., but I'll say that they do continue to kind of build off of what they've been doing the last couple of weeks. I'd say like a 1-1.
1-1 draw?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. All right, I'll have to change it up. I'll say a 9-8.
You don't have to. You can go with the same.
I'll say a 9-8 win.
9-8 win.
Just to
cool.
Just kind of mix it up a little.
What do you got published right now? What should people go read?
Oh, man. I had that feature last week on JP and Tommy.
I got to read that. I still didn't do that one.
Yeah, that was fun to write. And,
Tommy, it was funny, by the way, because we were all standing in the press lounge before the game, and like there was 15 people watching the
Derby.
Kentucky Derby.
He was going nuts.
Did his like horse win or something?
His horse won. He won some money, and he got the race ended pretty much just before the game started.
Yeah,
so he had to run
there late. Yeah,
he had to run out of there, and he's like, "Now I can do the game." So. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. What else is?
I mean, I just normal kind of B writing stuff. Besides from that, how about you? You had your radio commercial thing.
Yeah, I wrote another like clickbaity story about for views about the best commercials on the or the definitive radio commercials on sports radio. I had Joe Cordell of Cordell and Cordell. I had you know, like Delilah's,
our number one sponsor,
Strip Club. We had like Corpolese Bakery. We had all of the, you know.
So I don't listen.
Kia of Coatesville.
I don't listen to sports talk radio anymore. I listen to a podcast, which was a great decision, but I do miss that Cordell and Cordell commercial.
Yeah,
for sure.
I you know, my car is so old and crappy that basically if I want to listen to a podcast, I gotta like plug my phone into like my 10-year-old head unit, or if they still call them that.
Yeah, Bluetooth in cars was a great invention.
Yeah, that's what I need. I need a new ride, man. We got to do like Patreon or something so I can make more money off the Philadelphia Union beat, because this ain't cutting it right now.
If they keep winning, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. We need wins. To generate interest. You know, it's funny too, because I listened. They were the topic on like Missinelli yesterday. Was man, all four of these teams are so crappy at the same time. I'm like, wow, the Union's crappy too. I mean, is that finally how soccer like gets in the discussion here? Like people start to accept soccer because this team is just as bad as all the other teams in town?
It hasn't worked so far, because in all those articles about how bad the teams are, it's always four. It's never five. People don't think to include the Union.
It's a good thing.
So.
Maybe that's when you want to be on the outside looking in. Yeah. That's about it. Yeah, Kevin and Dave. And you know, thanks everybody too, also who listen to the pod that I did with Simon last week. I think you know, it was the first phone call that we took, and I think it worked out well and people seem to enjoy it. So if you guys like that and you want me to keep trying to do them on the off weeks, and Dave and I can do it every other week, and then maybe I'll just get somebody on the phone and we'll do it the next week. That way I can get something out every week,
man.
And you know, do more content or something.
I don't know. I'm being benched. I'm being replaced.
No, listen, I picked up the dog and I physically put him outside the door. That's, you're not anywhere close to that. But I just think that was the easiest way to do just to try to make it a weekly thing for people who are asking. So, plus you got a newborn on the way. I'm not going to ask you to come to Fishtown every week.
It's bad enough coming here every other week.
Bring your two children and your dog over here. And we'll
okay.
Do the,
yeah.
That's about it though. Kevin Kincaid, Dave Zeitlin, DC United hosting Philadelphia Union. The Union's last game at RFK Stadium, barring an Open Cup or a playoff.
And the Union trying to win two games in a row, which
is
possible.
And go four games unbeaten.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to give, we got to be fair about it. And they're just close to starting a new streak.
Here we go.
We're breaking the old one. So
a new unbeaten streak.
There you go. It's always soccer in Philadelphia. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.